Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Food Connections Show, which is, as you know, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land in which our food is now grown. Today I'm joined by Bronwyn Woods and we'll be talking all about bees, which is very exciting for me because I've been wanting to get a beekeeper on ever since we started the show, and Bronwyn's the first one we've had on. So welcome, Bron.
Thank you, Anne. It's great to be here.
Bron started, got all interested in bees when she was doing a science degree at Melbourne Uni 30 years ago or something. She was majoring in zoology and she was very interested in animal behaviour. And if you know anything about bees, their behaviour is absolutely fascinating. And so now she's followed that interest and now she teaches people how to be beekeepers and in particular helps them to be the best beekeeper they can be, because it can be quite tricky and there's a lot to know about how to look after your bees. So we will have a little chat all about that and hopefully learn from Bronwyn. So we just talked before we came on air, and I was very interested to hear you say that the first thing you want people to understand when they start to learn about bees is that it's much more than getting honey.
It is.
Talk about that a little bit.
It really is, and it's quite when I have people come and have those preliminary chats, you know, that is what people, you know, that could be their end goal, and that is okay. But to get that end goal, you really need to put the energy into understanding the bee as well, mm-hmm. and understanding what the bee requires. And that takes energy in teaching yourself and understanding what's going around you. So understanding your environment, whether that's your local garden, your local suburb, and understanding that if you don't get honey in the first year and the second year, that's okay. That's what we deal with in having an agricultural entity and working with our environment.
Mm-hmm. So what do bees need? We need honey. What do they need?
Well, they need pollen. They need nectar, but they also need health. And so that's where we come in. When we take an animal and put it in a space that we want to manage, we need to know how to manage it properly. Mm-hmm. And so understanding the space requirements for bees, understanding how often they need to be checked, what diseases they get, and that also needs to be acknowledged about what you can do as the beekeeper. So the time it requires. People often say, oh, you know, this, you know, lots of things happen in agriculture in springtime, and that is true. There's lots of things happening in our bee world in the springtime, lots of growth within our hives. But beekeeping is a year-long task, and if we don't have the time to put into our bees for the whole year, we don't get the health in our beehives in those big booming times of the year.
Now, I'm never clear about what it is they do with the honey and what it is they do with the nectar. And is it the same bees that are collecting each thing, or are there special bees that get the nectar and special bees that get the pollen?
Well, it is special bees, but it's the same bee.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the forager bees that are ready to, in the sort of the third section of their lives, are out collecting water, they're collecting pollen and nectar from flowers, and they're bringing those resources back to the hive and storing them in their combs. And it's the nectar that comes back, and then the bees are actually dehydrating that nectar by using the natural ability to flap their wings to dehydrate.
Acting like a little fan.
They are. And that dehydration process is what is turning it into what we call honey. So
that comes straight from the nectar.
It is.
And what does the pollen then do? What do they do with the pollen?
The pollen they're bringing back to use for food for themselves,
uh-huh.
and they're mixing it with a nectar product to feed baby bees.
Oh.
So they need both, because the protein is from the pollen and the carbohydrates are from the nectars, and so they're using both of those sources of nutrition to help them be healthy. And that full circle of understanding what, when you have a beehive, whether you have it in an urban area or a rural area, you have to be aware of what is available for your bees in your immediate area. Our bees fly up to 5 kilometres to obtain those resources. But if we're thinking about in a rural area, for example, you can have a particular species of gum that flowers prolifically for 5-6 weeks, and then nothing for another 5 or 6 weeks, and maybe nothing flowering. So the bees have all that opportunity to go and forage and bring all that nectar back, and that's great, and they will store that. But then if we come along as beekeepers and say, oh, great, you know, there's lots of these combs are filled, and the bees, you know, I can take that honey away. If we're not thinking about the past or the future of what might be coming in our environmental cycles, we can be really detrimental to their health, because we take too much of what they need. They need that honey to fulfill.
Oh, okay. So if we take all their honey, that we're taking their food.
We're taking their food. Yeah. So really, as beekeepers, we're just taking the excess.
Right. So many questions. Do you know off the top of your head, if you were to put a beehive right here in Smith Street, Fitzroy,
yes,
where would they get their food? How would they go to the botanic gardens?
Oh, they'd go everywhere. Yeah. And it's actually a lot of urban beekeepers, and there's a business that has a rooftop hives here in Melbourne. They forage on weeds, on every sort of flower that you can imagine. I know there's a little garden inside the building here. They're very clever.
Mm-hmm.
They probably would go to whatever was closest.
Uh-huh.
They might go to the botanic. I don't know how many kilometres the botanic.
Yeah. So they head off out of the hive, and then whatever they strike, they go, oh, look at that, and they go and forage.
Yeah, the forager bees, it's fascinating the way that they navigate. They use the sun, and they go and forage, and then they come back. And as forager bees, they get the attention of their other workers on combs, and they do a little dance. And if they've struck gold, say they've, you know, found a great tree or a bunch of trees in areas, they will communicate that, and then the rest of the forager bees will sort of follow that leader.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. And the other substance I'm very interested in is royal jelly.
Yes.
How does that fit in with the pollen and the nectar and the storage and the dehydration?
It's very different. So the royal jelly is produced by the bees for the nutrition of the growing bee. And so all of the bees at an egg stage are sitting in a royal jelly. And it helps the bee develop and go through that process of metamorphosizing.
So they make it and they excrete it.
Yeah, they do.
Regurgitate it or eliminate it?
No, through a gland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, tell me the role of the queen and how she has to be looked after, because she's a much bigger insect, isn't she?
She's much bigger. And she's actually, so there's only, generally, there's only one queen per colony. There's there's quite a few examples where that is broken, that rule. But as a new beekeeper, we would tell our students, yes, there's one queen. She's much larger. She has to be larger because she has to have room for the sperm that she takes on from the male bees. And her job is to lay eggs.
Is she the only one laying eggs?
No, the female bees in the colony, the worker bees, can lay eggs. She's the only one that can produce fertile eggs. So a fertile egg will develop a female bee. An infertile egg will develop a male bee, a drone bee.
Oh, okay.
So unless we have a fertile, healthy queen within a colony, we can't see the progression of a colony. The colony will eventually die. So our queen is very important.
Yes.
But she doesn't do many things. She just lays the eggs.
Right. Okay. So who fertilizes her eggs?
Drones.
Drones.
Yeah. After she emerges from her cell, at the start of her sort of life cycle, she does what we call a mating flight. So she will go from her colony and fly to mating congregation areas. She'll mate up to 20, 25 drones until her spermatheca is full of sperm. It could happen over 1 or 2 days, but generally it could happen over a small period of time. She comes back to the colony, and that's her done, for the most part, of flying. So she's then back in the colony, and the worker bees are then sort of directing her to where they want her to start laying her eggs.
Right. So these drones that are hanging around,
yes,
are they just a bunch of guys all just hanging around somewhere, or are they part of another hive?
Generally, the queen is flying a reasonable distance, so she is mating with drones that are not part of her congregation. So her colony would have drones.
But she doesn't mate with them.
No, so that distance is evolutionarily so
genetically important.
There's lots of science going into where those congregation zones happen. That's
so we don't know. We just know if we've got a hive, we just know the queen's gone out and she's come back, and we don't know where she went.
Not often, mm-hmm. Unless you're a scientist and you were very, you know, really, really following exactly yeah. where she was going. And there's some great American scientists who have done some yeah. fascinating studies on, you know, where they go and how far they go, but not a lot done here in Australia.
Mm. And the thing that I love the most about the bees is the way they organise the honeycombs.
Yeah.
Can you describe what's going on with those worker bees and what's in all the different little sections and how it's all organised?
Yeah. And I think it's fascinating to think that hexagon shape is what they've chosen as their strength. So that they feel
structurally, you mean it holds it together?
Yeah. And it's what they see as the structure as of the highest strength. So, and they put everything in there. So they're putting their resources, they're putting their babies, and they're putting they're creating it themselves. So that wax that they secrete in glands, they make it. They secrete the wax and then they manipulate it into that hexagon shape so that they can put everything in there.
But then you look there and it's like a house because yeah. they got all the honey over there in that section in the little what do you call them? Cells? Or
yes, cells, yeah.
And then you've got the, over there they've got pollen and then they've got babies over here. And
In an ideal setting, yes, all of the brood, that's what we call babies, or they're developing eggs into bees, is generally in the middle of a hive or a colony. And the resources, the honey and the nectar, are generally on the outside. That helps the bees insulate the growing babies.
Amazing.
It often happens that way. It doesn't always happen that way, but
right.
that's generally how it happens.
Uh-huh. All right, we'll have a little break and we'll be back for more.
Get lost in science.
To 3CR every week to hear
Beth,
Chris
and Stuart
discuss news and issues from the universe that is science.
Get informed and learn a bit more about the world around you. Lost in Science can be heard every Thursday at 8:30 in the morning and is repeated the following Tuesday at 6 a.m.
Word to the nerd. You can also download a podcast. Go to the website at www.3cr.org.au and get lost in science.
Slums in some metropolitan centers are coming down, condemned by forward-looking civic governments. Down are coming the bad living conditions that produce bad citizens.
The practical uses of asbestos are very numerous. At least 18,000 articles are made of it.
In the spring, the nature-loving Australian goes bush.
The wife washes and the dishes dry themselves.
It's a serial pest.
Cities within cities, scientifically planned and built, where a man and his family with a small income can live with comfort and dignity as investments in democracy.
Kill your lawn and kick your fence. A show about how we live in the cities and suburbs and the ideologies behind them.
Fridays every fortnight at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m.
With the dirt, you'll observe it's certainly not inert. From a worm to a chicken, you're never alone on the dome. And it's time to get to work. We've been looking up.
This is the Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show, which you may be doing now, or you can also go to all of our podcasts and hear about 100 episodes all the way back for the last 2 years. Today we're chatting with Bron Woods about beekeeping. We've talked all about the hive and what the bees are all doing in there. And now I would like to move a little bit broader and talk about the role of bees in our food system. So can you explain how honeybees are connected to the food that we eat every day?
So connected, Anne, so connected. So I think the scientists tell us that every third bite that we consume has had some impact by the honeybee. And I didn't mention before, we're generally talking about the European honeybee, so the Apis mellifera bee. Lots of native bees here in Australia, over 1,800 species of native bees. But when we're talking about our agricultural systems, we're generally talking about that European honeybee. So I don't know the number of species, of crop species here in Australia that absolutely are determined, the output is determined by honeybees, but think of all our fruits, our pumpkins, our almonds. You know, almonds are very heavily reliant on bees. All those beautiful fruits from the Mildura area.
Right. So, and you mentioned before, I think either before the show or during, that they are susceptible to disease. And you said, I think, that that's getting a little bit more prevalent. Is that just within the industry or is it more prevalent in the wild as well?
Yeah, in the last couple of years, Australia has had an incursion of a mite that has been in the rest of the world. It hadn't been in Australia until a couple of years ago. So we're just adapting our management techniques as beekeepers to manage that. So I suppose that's a change that a lot of commercial beekeepers and hobbyists, of course, but they're going through that change and different needs to keep that under control and keep our bees healthy.
Mm. And there's been a lot of alarm, hasn't there, about the decline of bees worldwide. What are some of the causes of that other than disease or parasites?
A lot of monoculture systems in our agriculture systems around the world create a system. Like, if you think of us, if we were just to eat one fruit or one vegetable, not only would we get bored, but we'd only be getting the same nutrients every day. We wouldn't be getting that breadth of nutrients and just good stuff for us. And that's the same with the bees. When we see, you know, hundreds of thousands of beehives going to the almonds in America and around the world, Australia as well, those bees are in an almond colony, an almond farm for 4 or 5 weeks, and then they're off to another farm. But that monoculture sort of systems don't allow them to have the breadth of exposure to all the micronutrients in other fruits and flowers and just environmental factors.
So there's an actual industry of people transporting bees around, you know, hiring them out to pollinate your crop.
Yeah.
Crazy, isn't it? So if that farmer just allowed a few weeds to grow and some other crops in amongst his crop, around it or near it or something.
And those sort of, those farms do exist,
they
but
must,
they're not as prevalent as the larger.
Right.
Yeah.
So the whole regenerative movement is going to be great for bees, hopefully.
It'll be amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely amazing thinking about those, you know, we were talking about the weeds and around here.
Yeah.
That sort of, you know, being able to have that diversity of food sources.
Yeah, yep. Now, what is the catastrophe going to look on this show? By the way, we try not to talk about the catastrophe that could be coming. We try to have just sort of kind of good news. But what is the catastrophe that could come if all the bees are declining in numbers?
I haven't really thought about it like that. I'm very positive. I'm a very positive thinker. I think with the varroa. The varroa mite incursion into Australia has changed the landscape of who is beekeeping. And I'm actually seeing it as a really positive. I'm trying to see it as a really positive thing. I think it will pressure the people that have been potentially really lazy beekeepers in the past. Potentially that will be the last straw for them, and they will say, no, I don't want to do this anymore. And that will allow the beekeepers that are really diligent and very focused on bee health to say, okay, well, this is an opportunity for me. I will get into this industry and I will take it to the next level, thinking about all of the amazing things that we can do, even though we have another pressure and another thing to manage.
Yep.
But it is just another thing. We've seen some really positive outcomes. There are declines in the world, but there's also some really great stories. New Zealand went through the same incursion and they've come out the other side with an industry that's very healthy and with beekeepers, commercial and hobbyist beekeepers, that understand that really it is about consistency. It is about looking at your bees throughout the year, not just hoping, oh, I hope I get honey this year. It is putting the time aside, acknowledging that beekeeping is an amazing hobby, but it does take time and it does take effort and it does take a little bit of brain power, which is great.
Right. Well, that brings me to my next question. I did have a little look into that for myself and did a little beekeeping course, but by the end of it, too fiddly, too sticky, too much orderliness required.
Yeah.
Having to put the big suit on, not interested in anything that takes that much effort. but there'll be people out here there who are. Talk to me about what someone could do today to pursue their interest in bees if they think it is something that they could manage.
I think you did it in the right order. I think taking yourself off and getting yourself educated is number one. To work all of the little bits out would be absolutely my recommendation for somebody who's thinking about, oh, do I want to get bees? If you're in an urban or a rural setting, it wouldn't matter. And then from there, then you can make really, really educated decisions. Do I have the space? And my answer there would be yes, everybody has the space. I don't think that is a governing factor. I think you can make that work. There's some amazing creative people out there doing chimneys and and putting bees on roofs and all of those sort of things. You know, it's that is something that you can work through.
Mm-hmm.
What about thinking about how you utilize the space? So thinking about in an urban setting, if you have a backyard and you think, oh, I'm going to put my beehive in the backyard, but you might have children or you might have dogs, maybe the backyard's not the appropriate place. Maybe there's a side pocket of your garden. Maybe it's the front yard, all of those sort of things. Thinking about the time, I think that a lot of people are quite shocked in that first year of how much time the beekeeping takes. And so it's not just, oh, I'll just nick out and have a look. But knowing that in that first year, yes, it is time consuming. An inspection that you might do in your first year when you go and have a look at your bees and you're checking your bees' health, your bees, how much space they have, other diseases, do they have resources? That sort of check might take an hour and a half from start to finish, getting all the big suit on, getting everything cleaned up. But maybe in your second year, that same check, maybe that's taking 30 minutes. And then maybe in your second year, it's taking you 15 minutes. So it does, it gets much more effective as you go along. And then the stuff, you know, do I have room for the stuff? How am I going to, if I do have a great year and there's all of these flowers around me and I do have honey, and there are years where there is, where there are hobbyist beekeepers coming to me and saying, I've got too much honey. What do I do with all this honey? Well, how are you going to get that honey? And, you know, the bees have done all the hard work. They've given you all of these great resources. How are you going to take that, you know, how are you going to share that resource with the bees? And so does that mean I might join my local bee club, and instead of buying all the things, I'm going to be part of that community and I'm going to hire all of the extraction gear. And maybe I'm going to do it with a friend rather than by
Talk
myself.
Talk to me about that, Bronwyn, because you said a lovely thing. The very first thing you said when we started chatting this morning was, what did you say, that it's much better to be a beekeeper in the company of other people, to do it with others?
Yeah, I see, and there's always exceptions to that rule, that it is a great hobby, but I see more success when people are doing it as a community. So whether that means, you know, your neighbour and yourself get together and have bees together, whether you're part of a beekeeping group, whether you're part of a little community, you know, education or environmental group that want to do that, whether you're part of a community garden and you're the beekeeper at a community garden, I think the amount of information that there is to absorb to become a beekeeper, in especially in that first 12 to 18 months, if you're able to share the load of taking what you read and what you see in books and YouTube, that's very common, and then taking that information into a space where you can't generally have phones open and access to social media, and you are there with your big suit on, with your gloves, all the honey going everywhere. If you're there with another person, our brains, you know, we might read the same book, and we will gain different things from that particular, the same book, the same paragraph, or the same lecture that we go to. We will hear different things. And I really do see when there are two people, three people, four people going at it and doing the same task, your success rate is just much higher.
Well, there's another thing, that your success rate's much higher if you do it with others. Yeah, so that's really great. Even gardening in a community garden, or going to a food swap, or farming, or whatever scale you're working at, do it with other people. Thank you for saying that. That was I couldn't have ended the show any better. I couldn't think of a better message to end with. Yeah. Where can people go? Tell me about where you do your teaching, and where some people can access the knowledge.
I do a couple of short courses a year at Edendale Community Farm out in Eltham in the eastern suburbs. It was a great day where we just chat about all the things, you know, how do I do it? What do I need to think about? The biology of bees is really important in that. Then, you know, we were talking about the absorbing of information. If you don't understand that, the biology of the bee, you don't understand how to manage it. So all of those things are really important. But Agriculture Victoria has some great information about hobby beekeeping. There's some great books. A lot of people in Australia start off with the Australian Beekeeping Manual by Robert Owen. Fantastic couple of editions there. And then there's some great resources on pests and diseases and things like that.
Fantastic. And I noticed too, even if you go to the Local Food Connect website, I noticed there's a few different things on offer this month, different aspects of beekeeping, not necessarily a whole course in it. So you can go there too. And I think your classes are often advertised on that, aren't they? Okay, that is all we've got time for. It was an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Bron.
Thank you, Anne. It's lovely to be here.
Thanks for coming in all the way from Watson's Creek. My name is Anne Stanley. My guest was Bron Woods. To find out more about beekeeping and perhaps sign up for a course, go to localfoodconnect.org.au. And until next week, love the land you're on. Share your surplus. Take care of each other. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.